Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Image. I'm Dan Phillips. This program is focused on personal image development. These shows will discuss topics ranging from custom tailoring to business attire to communication and everything in between. Stay tuned. This is The Art of Image.
Thanks for joining us here in foggy San Francisco. Today is show 6 on interview presence, speech and body language. And of course, once again, we have Parker Geiger here from the Chuva Group, image expert. Parker, how are you this morning?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Doing very good. Very good. You know, I recently discovered an article. Now, today's show is about body language and speech at the interview. Now, in this article that I've read, it explains, well, it was a Newsweek article, actually.
Okay.
Newsweek article. And the article was written in February of 2007, not too long ago. But here's the article. I wanted to read it. It's a brief excerpt. It says, let's say you're all set for your big interview, the one you're confident will change your career. You know you can wow the person across the desk with your accomplishments, or you're ready to give the presentation that reflects months of hard work and success. But before you even open your mouth, the rest of your body has already spoken volumes. What does your body language say? Does it say you're confident, smart, and enthusiastic, or just the opposite? Only a small percentage of communication involves actual words, 7% to be exact. In fact, 55% of communication is visual, body language, eye contact, etc., and 38% is vocal. Pitch, speed, volume, tone of voice. The world's best business communicators have strong body language, a commanding presence that reflects confidence, competence, and charisma. Now, this says it all, doesn't it? I mean, human beings have a strong visual wiring, and I suppose this dominant visual wiring goes back to our earlier more primitive origins when we truly depended on our sight for survival against predatory animals.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts about this article? I mean, I just found this to be fascinating.
Well, it's a study that was done by Albert Mehrabian. Actually, I think it was UCLA in California in 1979, where he said 58% is body language, you know, how to communicate your attitudes through your body language, your voice tone, and the words that you actually use. Throughout the years, he actually had to write another book about that study because so many people misinterpreted what that really meant. I mean, some people will say talking on the phone, you know, all of that, you know, 90% of how you communicate your attitude is you can do it through the phone. In reality, the 55% really talks about facial expressions because that's really where we show our true emotions are on our face. Now, it doesn't mean that your body can't, you know, complement those expressions. You know, a big myth about body language is that you can draw, you look at one nonverbal cue and draw a conclusion, and that's impossible. You have to look at the total sentence or the total message. You know, like, for example, crossing your arms. People say, oh, you're shutting me out. And that's not true. If I'm leaning towards you or I'm standing comfortably and I'm showing interest in other ways of my body, then that's what the whole message is about. But, you know, you talk about confidence and credibility and you walk into a room. There's a lot of ways that when you show up, you know, what are you really saying? And are you walking with confidence and credibility? And I think a lot of people, where they lack in the beginning of an interview, is that they're nervous and insecure and they're not really sure. So that's how the body language comes through. So for me, it's all about confidence so that the body language can carry that confidence for you.
I see. Now, Parker, I want to go into the questions for this morning.
Okay.
And the first one I have for you is, what are some fundamental things we know about our voice and overall speech when communicating?
Well, it's, you know, when you think about voice tone, you think about two different areas of that. There's two components. One is your actual voice tone, how you project, the quality of your voice. Is it high pitched? Is it low pitched? And then the other one is the tone. It's how you say something. You know, so if you're looking at your, let's talk about your voice tone first, because that's really what people will either need to work on or enhance. But, for example, some people have a very high-pitched voice, which is really kind of disturbing to the ear. Some people have very low monotone, and it's straight across. There's no inflections at all, which shows no interest or enthusiasm. Doesn't mean the person's not. It's just not coming through. So what I try to get folks to do is to really look at, where are you on that? Are you centered in the middle, or are you, you know, balanced? Or are you really high-pitched or low-pitched? And really need to kind of work on that. Those people that are really high-pitched need to learn how to practice to bring it down a little bit. And there are some voice coaches that that specialize with, like, singers, for example, to really help them with their voice, that voice tone for them. And then the other one is really about how you say something. That's where that 38%, it refers to that voice tone. It's not what you say, but how you say it. It's real critical. So when you're looking at tone, you're looking at those two components.
I see.
So if you're like a, if I, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, fine, I can continue.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, when you're looking at, the way I explain it sometimes when people are talking, you know, if you think about a heart monitor when people are in the hospital, you know, it goes up and down, that means that, you know, things are going really well. And some people, when they talk, they're always on top. They are just really high up there, and that's not good. And then really low, if you get a bottom line, there's no life there. And that's what people's perception is. And that's why they really want to focus on, listen to their voice, you know, record their voice, ask their friends how they speak, because they'll be honest with you. It's hard to listen to your voice on a recorder. You know, we don't like the way we sound. But we probably don't sound the way we think we sound, even though we hear it, literally. I mean, do you hear your voice back when you play these interviews back? Do you hear your voice inflections and your tone and think it sounds like you or not like you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are times when, you know, I'm really kind of excited about something, and I notice, well, how come, you know, and I'm listening to myself while I'm saying it, and I'm thinking, well, you know, that didn't quite come across who I really internally feel inside about what's happening, you know, whatever it is. And that,
yeah, because
that disharmony, that disharmony between your internal thought process or your feelings and then what you express in an audio, you know, in your speech is I think has a real effect. I think that's what we're talking about, is that disharmony between those two things.
Exactly. And what you want to do is try to marry the two. So it's mostly for people who are at the extremes, you know, not in the center of balance with their tone. So if they could just practice on that and figure out, well, how can I sound more enthusiastic when I respond to this question or greet someone, you know, and you don't want to be fake about it, of course, you know, but there are ways that your voice tone can actually carry your credibility, for sure.
Well, how can we, you know, how can we sound enthusiastic or interested, for instance, in a job we're interviewing for? And that's something I think people are very much aware of that concept, that idea that you do need to sound enthusiastic at an interview. But sometimes it's something that you think about in hindsight. You know, oh, I should have sounded a little more enthusiastic there. How do we change that? How do we sound more enthusiastic?
Well, you know, what's funny is that there are some people that need to tone it down, and there are some of those who need to tone it up, with no pun intended. I mean, people come in really hyper, they're high energy, they're very extroverted. They need to kind of relax and bring it down. Just if someone's really low monotone, they need to bring it up. And so, for example, someone who's low monotone, and if you think about a straight line, when they speak, that's how it sounds. Very low key, doesn't move, doesn't change pitch, doesn't go up, doesn't go down. It becomes very boring. But so what you want to do is think about what part of that sentence or what part of that are you talking about that you're excited about. So you may say, for example, I love to manage people. If I say I love to manage people, has no energy. But if I say I love to manage people, see, just by emphasizing one word will automatically lift it up. Now, here's the other thing about that. You got to believe what you're saying. You know, your body doesn't lie, and your voice supports what you say. So if you really love managing people, then your body language is going to reinforce that. With the tone part, you just have to figure out what word that you really want to emphasize. Maybe that sentence is not love, but manage. You know, I love managing people. You know, just emphasize that a little bit. It gives some interest and some ebb and flow to the conversation instead of being very flatlined.
I see. So we just need to think really a little bit more about emphasis, emphasizing certain words, changing that tone there every now and then, and creating a more interesting, I suppose, audio presence.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, people, if they do their, you know, if they practice their interviews, they're going to have certain questions they're going to ask, you know, the person that's interviewing them, but also they're going to prepare some statements like, tell me about yourself. So they should already have that written out. They should have that story in their head. And then what they should do is they're writing all of that out is really say, what part do I want to emphasize here? What word, what area, you know? And if you start practicing that, if it's not part of your natural psyche, then you can eventually make that part of your interviewing process and to make it not sound canned, but really passionate and sincere.
I see. So just practice this. Practice makes perfect. Now, the next question I have here is, since we're speaking about, you know, your speech and tone and all that, what is considered the normal speaking rate, you know, the speed at which you talk?
Well, there's been some studies out there. It's really not so much about what's the normal speaking rate. It's about what rate you speak in order for a person to comprehend the information. So on average, it's about 182. So it's like between 175 to 200 words per minute is how a person can comprehend what you're saying on an average. So what I recommend to people is to take a Word document, highlight a paragraph, get about 100 words there, and time yourself and just read that paragraph and see how long it takes you. And if you're over a minute, you got to slow it down. If you're way under like 175, you got to speed it up some. So, you know, the key number is probably about 178, but I would say, I'm sorry, 186. But if you keep it between 175 and 200 words per minute, it's pretty stable for that. So it's really about comprehension. You know, in the South, there's a lot of folks down here that speak really slow. You know, but there's a lot of Southerners who speak really fast. And my baby sister's one of them. She talks 90 miles an hour. And I'm like, I'm trying to keep up with what she's talking about and listen, you know. And I get the same way. And so I'm like, okay, Brenda, you need to just slow down a little bit and let's bring it down from 400 words per minute to at least 200.
Wow. Yeah, that's fast.
Yeah, she's a fast talker.
Well, Parker, what is the most effective technique in the interview we can use in conversation?
Effective conversation, to me, the number one rule is to listen. People just don't listen.
Okay.
And they're always concerned, like people don't remember someone's name because they're trying to think about, okay, I'm going to listen to their name. I'm going to think about what I'm going to say next. Or, you know, if I'm being asked a question in an interview, a lot of times we're thinking about how we're going to already answer it. We're going to already think about what we're going to ask next. And we're not, if you just stay in the moment and listen to the question, then you respond more effectively. But too often we're not in the moment. We're always thinking ahead. So what I tell people is just get centered where you are in your seat. Don't think about anything else and think about what's happening now, what might not happen in 60 seconds from now. So for me, it's all about listening.
All about listening. What topics should be avoided entirely at an interview? You know, sometimes we just don't know, like what the parameters are. Sometimes, you know, how deeply can we go into certain areas and that sort of thing. But what topics should be avoided entirely at an interview?
Well, there's certain questions that are just really illegal to ask in an interview. Now, a lot of people innocently ask questions because they're not interviewing every day. They don't work in HR. They happen to be an account manager. He's doing an interview for someone, and they do it once every 5 years, you know? So they may ask a question that's very illegal but very innocent. So I think you have to really decipher between that. And my first response is don't get defensive about it. But questions about, you know, are you married? You know, do you have children? What's your religion? What's your sexual preference? You know, all of that stuff. Those things are just totally off the record. You know, they should not be asked. So for me, it's, you know, the interview is all about an opinion, for example. So they'll ask you how you did something in the past and what you did or what would you do with this situation. That's fine. But the question is, how do you first of all, the rule is don't engage those conversations, you know, that I just spoke of. You don't initiate those. The challenge is, what if you're asked those kind of questions and how are you going to answer it? And it's really dependent on what the question is. But you need to think about it. First of all, don't get defensive and don't be offended either, you know, because it's going to show that. Now, this is also, you have to ask yourself, you know, why are they asking this question? Is this a group I really want to work with? Is this important to them? Does it meet my values? Because the interview is a two-way process. You know, you don't want to work in an environment that goes against your own values, and that's for you to get back to listening. You know, what are they really saying? What are they really asking? You know, but I always say stay neutral on the questions. For example, if someone's asking a question that you know is inappropriate or illegal, if you come out and say, that's not a legal question, I'm not going to answer that, you come across kind of rude and abrupt. Again, depending on what the question is. But you can always say, for example, if they talk about religion, you know, or something like, don't know what would come up, but let's just say that would come up. And you can respond just by saying, you know, I'm not really sure what my faith or what religion has to do with the job. However, I realize I'm going to be managing, you know, 38 account executives in this position, and they all come from different walks of life, and I'm definitely aware of that and will accommodate certain holidays or recognize people's and respect what they believe. Although it may be different than mine, I'm always respecting what other people do or believe as long as it doesn't harm me. And that's a whole different response than saying, you know, that's an illegal question, you know, because
right.
you don't
yeah,
you seem very defensive
about it.
Exactly.
Now, if a topic requires an opinion, you know, and they're just trying to get a sense of, you know, how you would do something on the job or if confronted with a certain situation, that's what you're speaking about. That's, I guess, what they would call a behavioral interview?
Yeah, those are the behavioral interviews. And it's just getting your behavior. What would you do in this situation? How have you handled this in the past? Tell me about when.
Okay.
And you really need to be prepared for that because that's really where most professional interviews are done. When I say professional, it's like an HR department. They're trained in how to interview those questions. There's a whole technique behind it. And there's a whole different level from, you know, going into an entry level to a CEO position. One of our clients just applied for, had an interview, 3-day interview process this past week. And she's going to be managing a lot of people. About 18,000 people are going to be under her. That's a much more intense because you're talking about managing and developing and training and how, you know, they said to her, for example, here are these 18,000 people. You've got them in 10 different regions. How are you going to manage consistency and training in that? You see, and then she's going to tell her philosophy and how she would go about doing that because they want to know that's why they're hiring her, is bringing all that outside expertise that she's had success in the past with. So it's her job to convey that information to them.
Okay. So what they're really after is, you know, based on the answers you give to those questions, you want to determine your future behavior. And when you're confronted with a situation like that, the one that they've described. So what would be the best way for someone to kind of get some clues as to what those questions might be at an interview that are all behavioral? Is there a good place for someone to get acquainted with the type of questioning?
There's so much information on the internet. I mean, you, it's just overloaded. Just type in behavioral on Google. Just type in behavioral interview questions, and just type that in, and you will see tens of thousands of options and companies. And just kind of scan through and see what scenarios or questions are relevant to your industry and your position and what you're doing. And more than likely, those type of questions will come up. And they can even break down the behavioral interviews into management, director, CEO, account executive. So you can even break it down even more so the situations are relevant to what you do. And the main thing about that is
okay.
Just don't try to, you know, don't spend 10,000 hours on it. You know, it's not brain surgery. Just find the ones that are most relevant, get a good response to that, get comfortable with that, and then you'll come across confident and credible in your answers.
Okay, great. Now, let's switch gears here for a minute and talk about body language.
Okay.
Body language, definitely visual language. In your experience, Parker, what are some of the most common flaws people have with regards to their body language at the interview?
I think the most common mistake people do is they slouch, you know, and they slouch when they're standing and they can slouch when they're sitting down. I don't mean slouch, and that's kind of a slang word, but, you know, slouch is kind of you know, when people walk, for example, someone walks into the reception area in an office, you know, sometimes when we're standing, we slouch with our shoulders. Our shoulders are curved in, and it makes it look a little bit humped over, you know. And
yep.
So what I tell people is roll your thumbs out. Now, if you can visually, you know, get this, you're standing up straight. You just look in the mirror, take a deep breath, and you can see where you kind of slouch from the shoulders. So what you really want to do is roll the shoulders back. I've seen experts in my industry going, you know, stand up straight and put your chest out, and you walk around like that's really weird. It's not natural. You know, you're not a model going down the runway. That's a totally different approach, okay? But if you stand up and you're slouching, if you'll notice where your thumbs are, they're closer to your leg or closer to your body. And what I say is start practicing rolling your thumbs, turning your thumbs out, and as you turn your thumb out, your shoulder blade will kind of curl back up and go back.
Really?
And that's what I always say, thumbs out. So, you know, stand there and you just roll your thumbs out and pull your shoulder blades back. It's a very slight difference, but it says a whole different message. And so that's how when they're standing. And so when you walk into that reception room, you want to walk in with that, with thumbs out, you know. So they just remind, I always, when I go on stage, I always say thumbs out. You know, it's just a quick reminder, let's get the shoulders back. Let's come in with confidence. The other way is when people sit. When we slouch, when we're sitting, we're slouching from our waist. So we're sitting down and kind of the base of our spine, we're just kind of slouched over. So what I tell people is to just push your waist forward, and it will push up your torso. Don't push your chest out and stick it out and, you know, shoulders back, because that's not natural either. So if you just sit down and practice it and look in the mirror and then push your waist forward, it will literally push up your torso. And those are the two, you know, I think, ways that people can maintain a positive body language during an interview.
Yeah, I have heard, actually, that the receptionist might be one of the very people who gives feedback to the company as to your presence, you know, just your behavior and what sort of a character you were, a personality you were, there before the interview ever even takes place. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You know, from the minute you walk in, that drive into that parking lot, you can assume anybody there may see you. You never know. You know, so you don't want to blow the horn at people in the parking lot if they're not going fast, or, you know, or you're trying to run everybody over because you're running late. I mean, I know that sounds kind of crazy, but you just never know who you're going to run into. So just keep in your mind that everyone there is watching you. You know, not creating fear. It's just that, hey, this may be somebody I talked to on the elevator, and you walk up, and that could be the person you're interviewing with. You know,
right.
So how you interact now, in the interview with someone.
Now, and then sometimes, you know, we're sitting there waiting for our interview to take place. We're sitting in the lobby, the reception area, what have you, and, you know, we may be there 15 minutes, or sometimes even a little bit longer.
Or longer,
and,
even an hour.
What are some
people
of the activities, maybe, you know, because oftentimes we get bored there. We're feeling a little bit like, you know, what's going on? I should be in my interview by now. What are some things that maybe we should be watchful of in terms of that period of time before the interview takes place while you're sitting there in the lobby?
Well, what I tell people is when you go in, first of all, you want to say hello to the receptionist. Give them your business card. State the person that you have a meeting with. Don't say interview. I just have a meeting with Parker Geiger at 2 o'clock. And they'll say, thank you, give them the business card. And then when you sit down, you really want to think about where you're going to sit. If you have a chair or a sofa, don't sit on the sofa, because if that interview waiting period takes 30 minutes or an hour, you're going to be kind of getting lazy and sitting back and slouching down. They come out to greet you. You're going to have to kind of pull yourself together. So I always say pick a chair if you can, but you want to be in a position where you think the person's going to be coming from. You want to sit on the edge of your chair, not back of the chair. You want to kind of sit forward. I don't mean really formal and unnatural, but be prepared to go at a moment's notice. I tell people all the time, sit your portfolio or your handbag on your left side of you so you can reach down as you see them come, close your portfolio, and just really be able to shake their hand and stand and smile and say hello at the same time. But if you're sitting there engaged and reading a book, I mean, think about nonverbally. If you're reading People magazine versus their annual report off their coffee table, what message are you sending? So there's two people waiting to be interviewed, and one walks out, and one's reading People magazine, and one's reading the annual report. Which one do you think is not really interested in the job? So there's a lot of nonverbal things that are going around besides just the body language, because, like you said, the body language speaks volumes, but what you're doing or not doing speaks volume as well.
And is it true that sometimes employers will actually have you wait out an inordinate amount of time just to get an idea as to what your reaction is and how you develop there during those moments, as if it was a test, you know?
I think that they do. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about what people have done, and I don't really know their reason behind it, but there's always a reason why behind it, whether you agree or disagree. People do things like that. I'll give you a good example. I had a client a few years back, was going to CFO position, young guy. Kind of unusual for his industry to be someone at that level. So he flew from Georgia here in Atlanta, and he flew to L.A., and it was at a really nice hotel. It was in a hotel suite penthouse, and, you know, they can be big, 2,000-4,000 square feet. So he walks into the space, and it's a huge living room. Everything had been cleared out except three chairs. So imagine this big rectangular living room. They were placed in a triangle format, and they sat him in the top chair. So when he was looking to his right across the room, he was looking at the CEO. When he was looking to his left, he was looking at the comptroller. So, you know, and why they did that, I'm not really sure, because he called and asked me. I said, I have no idea. I can only probably, like, if you're looking at the CFO, you can't see what the other person's doing. They want to maybe see if you get nervous or how you handle pressure. They may even have, at that level, you know, you have psychologists that come in that really, they do a lot of heavy interviewing. They just don't take those positions lightly. So it might have been something that a psychologist told them to do, and whatever that was, I never found out. But you can't be taken off guard. That's the main thing. Just be aware. You walk in a situation like that, or they make you wait an hour, don't get frustrated. And don't keep, you know, they're not going to make you wait more than an hour, you know. But if they do, the receptionist is going to be telling you, don't keep bugging them. Just relax, because they're the ones in control right now. But if you show poise and control and respect, and as you're sitting there, then that comes across as being very a positive person, someone who can handle pressure, someone who is patient, you know, and they might want to see how you do, because they may not be looking for that, but if all of a sudden you start reacting to it and getting upset and all those things, that's going to come out, and they're not going to like that, you know, so it's going to work against you.
Yeah.
And you can be sitting, while you're sitting there, if I may just say one more thing about that, you know,
absolutely.
you can be sitting there overlooking your notes, you know, your answers. Don't try to do anything new while you're there. But, you know, you look at their annual report. Well, they're 10 or 15 minutes later. They haven't come out yet. 25 minutes have passed. You can have your portfolio there. You can be making some notes, just reinforcing what you're doing. But don't do anything that's off track from the interviewing process, because it'll distract you. You're there to interview. Stay focused on the interview.
Now, Parker, oftentimes we hear the idea, everyone said it, I'm sure, or someone has told someone else this, but, make a great first impression. Everyone's mm-hmm. got that in the front of their mind. But I think what we are thinking about when we hear that is, make a great impression. We're thinking about the things that we're going to say, the content of what we're saying. But mm-hmm. how do we make a great first impression with our bodies?
Well, it's something like I said earlier, when the minute you walk in to that, that's what you want to be careful of. The minute you walk in, you want to make sure that your body is all about while you're sitting there with someone talking, and you want to mirror their body language, and that's not what they're doing. Just because they sit back and cross their legs, that means you should sit back and cross their legs. But what is their overall message? Is it more relaxed? Any more forward? Are they more formal? And then that's what you formula. So mirroring is a very way to make a person feel they have something in common with you without saying.
And that goes back to the, I think it was the third show we had done related to creating that professional image. And you were speaking about mirroring at the time and how really people got that idea all wrong about that it's mirroring that person's body language exactly. And it really wasn't about that, was it? I mean, it's about mirroring really the feeling, the mood that they're in, and that sort of thing. I mean, although it does touch upon having somewhat similar body stance, it really had more to do with the mood and the feeling. It was
exactly.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, it's said that 55% of how you communicate your attitude is with your body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can your body be trained to naturally support your tone and the words that you use? It's going back to the idea of harmonizing or creating harmony between those two ideas. How do we accomplish that?
Well, part of that is you don't really, your body doesn't lie. So it's like you can say one thing, you say, yes, I really like Daniel. But your body language, if you really don't like Daniel, your body language is going to show somehow. It's going to not reinforce that exactly what you just said. So what you want to do is make sure that everything you say is truth, and then just be aware of your body naturally. Do you naturally slouch all the time? Be aware of that. Train yourself to start sitting differently, standing differently, walking differently. Do you walk in really slow and monotone and not showing much interest, or do you walk in with some kind of pep in your step? And so you got to really know who you are. Get your friends to evaluate you, because they'll tell you, you look sloppy, you do this. So you got to figure out those two or three things and fix them. And it, like I said before, it's not brain surgery, it's awareness. So once you're aware of that, you just correct it. So like we talked about earlier, thumbs out, pushing your waist forward and you're sitting down. Be aware of, if you're in an interview for an hour and a half, how lazy you become in your body language. And awareness of the whole time is very critical. Does that make sense to you?
I have an email here.
Okay.
Yes, Parker?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, we have an email.
Okay.
Just received an email here. How can I control excessive nervousness? The email reads, I have great experience in my field and have all the necessary education for my chosen career. My problem is that at interviews, I get tongue-tied and blush easily. How do I change this? And that's from Matthew.
Okay.
Thank you, Matthew.
Matthew, what you need to do is you need to first become aware of those nervous habits. And it may be that you're just standing there, when you're sitting down, maybe you shake your knee up and down, or maybe you tap your fingers a lot. Just become aware of those nervous habits and start replacing with positive habits. For example, if you tend to fidget your fingers a lot, tapping on the desk or a chair, or moving them around, what I tell people to do is to hold your wrist with your other hand. So you're not doing that.
Okay.
So it's really just recognizing those habits and then figuring out a way to correct them. People blush naturally. They can't really cover that up. And that can be enduring as well.
Yeah, that could be a problem, you know, if you blush. I mean, I guess that's an internal process that, you know, it's physiological, obviously, but how can someone alleviate a situation like that where a certain situation is just automatically, you know, and I've seen this before. I know what this emailer is talking about. Are there certain things that we can do to solve that?
Well, you mean about the blushing part of it or the body language? Yeah, the blushing. The blushing is just your body is reacting. It's all internal, you know, and so it's really hard to – you can't really stop yourself from blushing if that's what normally happens to your body. But I think if you stay in control and be very calm, that will reduce that happening a great deal. I don't know that you can knock it out completely. But what you might want to do is try to not be so nervous and not so anxious. And if you prepare early on and are really, truly prepared for that interview, you'll have a less chance of that happening because you're not going to get nervous and worry about something and focus on what the questions are and the answers are.
Great advice. Now, what are some tools or techniques we can use to help train us in better body language?
Well, I think it's if you think about tools and techniques, I would say, first of all, videotape yourself. Have someone videotape you while you're sitting in a chair and they're asking you questions and you're answering them. And have them look for nervous habits. Do you have a twitch? Do you shake your hands? Do you shake your feet? Do you tap your feet? You know, nervous habits. And then bad habits are when someone asks you a question, do you look away, look for the answer, and then come back and have a disconnect? Maybe the way that you sit, very disrespect. You might lean back in the chair, put your feet out, you know, whatever it is you do naturally. And by videotaping that and have somebody evaluate that for you, then you become aware of those two or three things that you need to correct. And then you got to figure out what to do to stop that from happening. For example, I was preparing a young woman for a panel discussion, and she was always nervous and, you know, putting her foot up and down where her knee was shaking the whole time. And this particular table situation was not going to have a skirt on it, so people were going to see that. So I said to her, if that's the situation, when you get there without a skirt and they can see it, then you might want to bring your legs back and you know, have them wrapped around each other, like women do, to stop that from happening. But if you just have your feet flat on the floor, you're going to have more tendency to shake your feet than not shake your feet. So it's really videotaping yourself, highlight your nervous habits, highlight your bad habits, and then learn ways to correct them. For example, one of the biggest mistakes people make in an interview, when they're interviewing and someone asks them a question and they have to think about it, most people start looking up immediately to the heavens, like, God, please give me the answer to this question. And they think about it, and they start talking, and they come back and have eye contact again. Well, there's a big disconnect there. So the new place, the technique to put into place is get into the habit. When someone asks you a question, you start talking first and then look away and then come back. But don't go away too long. In a lot of our coaching sessions, people will go off for 60 seconds somewhere and not have eye contact with the person they're speaking with. And that's a huge disconnect.
I see. And how long should that looking away, I mean, what's the longest period of time, I suppose, that someone could look away? You know, let's say you're talking to someone, well, you're at an interview, and
mm-hmm.
you're answering the question. They ask you a question, you answer
mm-hmm.
it, but then your eyes shift, let's say, outward towards a window or another part of the room. How
mm-hmm.
long, really, should your eyes be away from that person?
Well, you should be having eye contact at least 70% of the time of engagement, because you don't want to be just staring at someone the whole 70%. 70% of the time should be good, consistent eye contact, because if it's less than 50%, then it's disinterest. So the key there is not really – it's really on the person. And I know this might sound a little crazy, but there are some people that are just engaging naturally, and they can look away for 60 seconds, and they don't lose your interest, and you don't lose their interest. You know, they're always engaged you somehow. That's just part of their soul. It's part of their energy. But 90% of us aren't that engaging. So you stay engaging and showing interest with your eye contact. So I recommend people to look to the side, look down for a second, because remember the statue, the thinker is looking down. He's not looking up. So in our culture, you know, looking down shows you're thinking. So if you look down for a second and then look back up, I wouldn't be gone more than 10 seconds from someone.
And this, like you say, really, it could be simply the personality of the individual. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're disengaged. It's just their manner. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Because everyone's individual. That's what you don't want to do in this whole process is lose your individuality. Don't become someone you're not. You know, if you're more of a relaxed person, if you're more of a formal person, that's just who you are. You don't want to show up differently. But you do want to make sure that your message is consistent, you know. When you talk about the 55% body and tone and words, I always tell people keep them balanced because there's going to be part where the words are critical that are 90% of that message because they want to hear exactly how you handle that situation. There are times where the tone's going to be real critical in what you say. And there's time when the body language is going to carry you, you know, walking into that reception area before they even hear you speak a word. That's all about body language and how you show up. So it's not that you're going to make ones more important all the time than the other. There needs to be a balance. So I always tell people keep it in balance and just find out what part, when I'm giving my answers, of course your word and tone is more critical, you know, but you want your body language to reinforce that. So the key thing is for someone to keep their individual style, know who they are, and just try to communicate that in the most effective, authentic way.
Now, I briefly just wanted to go back to that emailer, Matthew, who had mentioned, you know, getting tongue-tied and then also blushing very easily during an interview. Something that I had read actually not too long ago was about that very thing. And what this article suggested was that before this event, whatever it was that really made you nervous, the thing that you could do is to go out and do exercise before that event takes place, and rigorous exercise. You know, go out and maybe, you know, run a couple of miles or a mile, but really elevate your heart rate. Sweat it out a little bit, and then when you do go to that interview or that nervous situation, that's really going to subside there. That vigorous exercise will have an impact on your performance.
Well, I agree with that 100%, and I'd like to even add to that. I think part of it is being part of the nervousness, and well, there's two things to this. Number one, the nervousness part. It's an unknown environment, you're not sure, et cetera, et cetera. So my advice is to get into that. Let's say it's a building, a high-rise, for example, or it's just being in a building or being in the parking lot. Get there. Be there for a while. If you always get really nervous, get comfortable with the environment so you feel comfortable where you are so you won't have as much to be nervous about. You know, for example, when I first did my first job interview in Atlanta years back, was at the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead. Well, I'm from North Florida. There aren't any fancy hotels where I'm from, you know, and that can be in a very intimidating environment. But if you go in there for a while and sit, maybe have coffee in the coffee shop down on the first level, and just get really comfortable with the environment and the people so you feel part of that environment. So you, when you get in there, you'll be less nervous. And then the other aspect about getting tongue-tied is that a lot of times a person, it's hard for them to communicate what they're thinking. And what they've got to really do is practice those answers and communicating with people. People get tongue-tied or they get nervous and can't put it out there because they really think in their head. A lot of introverts are that way. It's all in their head. They're trying to process it and think about it before they verbally say it, you know. And so a person gets kind of off-kilter. Remember the disc that we talked about at one of the interviews about the behavior types as a D, I, S, or C?
Yeah.
And a lot of SC people are like deer in headlights when they're talking to people because they got it all planned out. They got it in order. These are the questions they're going to ask me. And then all of a sudden they're asked a question that they didn't even think about in all their due diligence. And they're like deer in headlights, like, oh, my God, how do I answer that? You know? So what they have to do is just say to themselves, okay, this is an answer, a question I didn't expect. Let me hear the question and answer it the best way possible. And just tell yourself, pace yourself, don't get upset. You have to constantly have that conversation in your head, you know, during the interview to remind you. I remember when I was in college and I was taking a public speaking course at University of Florida, and I was making a D going into this class because I talked too fast, I rushed through, I didn't have my organizational faults together, I couldn't really get it out there. And in my final exam, when I gave my presentation, I actually, every other card, 3x5 card there, said slow down, don't rush, some comment to me to remind me. And so that extra card, every other card, gave me time to slow down. You see? So it's just practicing
right. And
recognizing and getting comfortable. And if a person has really anxieties and things like that, I highly recommend go on interviews that you don't even really want. Get the practice.
Go out there, just experience it, and then get familiar with the situations, and that'll help, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you're going to waste somebody's time because you really don't want the job, but you never know. There might be a job. It may be a job you end up taking. It may be they say, you know, we got this other position you're perfect for. Let me call John down the hall and see if he can meet with you real quick. You never know where it's going to go. You know, don't abuse the system,
exactly.
But get as much practice out there as possible, you know. Do it within the industry you want to do it in. Maybe it's not the right position you want, but who knows what could come out of it. But it's all about practicing. You know, if it's not natural for you, you got to practice. Otherwise, you're going to get tongue-tied and blush.
Exactly. Parker, we are out of time. And
already?
These shows really do go by quickly. But what I want to do is I want anybody who'd like to get in contact with you to have the ability to do so. And so if you have a phone number where they can reach you, Parker, go ahead
sure.
and let them know.
Yeah, one of the things I highly recommend for people when they're doing the interview process, part of that practicing is all the questions and answers and telling them about yourself, those kind of things. There's two reports that we highly recommend. That's a DISC report and a values report, and that really can help you get clear on who you are and how to communicate. Because a lot of people know who they are, but they don't know how to put it in words. And that's very helpful, especially for those who get nervous really quickly. But they can reach me at 678-705-2366, 678-705-2366. Or they can send me an email, which is really quick for me. It's parker@shuvagroup, and that's C-H-U-V as in Victor, A, group.
Great. And you can, and listeners, you can keep emailing us here with your questions for Parker. You can email us at artofimagetalk@gmail.com. Thank you again, Parker, and we'll see you on the next show.
Thank you, Daniel. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Art of Image is sponsored by LT Bodrick of San Francisco. I'm Dan Phillips. Thanks for listening.